You're listening to Ordinary Time, episode number 3. Welcome to Ordinary Time, the podcast for moms who seek to bring the riches of the church year into their homes, but have 100 demands on their time and energy. I'm Lauren, and my friend April and I are your hosts. April is a convert to Lutheranism from Evangelicalism. She homeschools her 3 children with the help of her husband and absurd amounts of coffee. She is a mediocre pianist, a decent baker, and an expert-level vintage book shopper. I am a cradle Lutheran, wife to my high school sweetheart and homeschool mom of 4, with a love of languages and a penchant for book buying and starting projects on a whim. You can find us on Instagram at Ordinary Time Podcast, where we share tips and ideas for living liturgically in the day-to-day. Today, we are joined on the podcast by 2 lovely seminary wives with a passion for liturgical living. Kristen Einertsen is a new mother to a baby boy and lives in St. Louis, Missouri. Tessa Minch is also a mother to 1 young son and lives in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Together, they have created All the Household, a comprehensive and practical resource for celebrating the Lutheran liturgical calendar. We are so glad to have them on the podcast today to discuss the importance of homemaking in forming a liturgical life. Let's get started.
Okay, Tessa and Kristen, welcome to the podcast. We're so glad to have you today.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about yourselves to start? Tessa, why don't you go ahead and go first?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you so much for chatting with us today. So my name is Tessa, and So my husband is a seminarian at Fort Wayne. So we live here in Indiana. And I have a son named Ambrose, and I really enjoy getting to be a homemaker and a wife and blogging with Kristen about liturgical living. So that's been just a really fun venture to do together. And that's the short and sweet of it.
Okay, great. Kristen, what about you?
Yeah, so I'm Kristen and I live in St. Louis. My husband is a seminarian there. He's working on his PhD right now, and so we're continuing to live here while he works on that. We just had our little baby Theodore in June, so that is keeping us very busy right now. But other than taking care of him and being a wife and staying at home, I also enjoy doing some of my own research and writing. I'm working on my PhD right now at the University of Minnesota. And wow. I study rhetoric, so that's what I spend a lot of my free time doing, and trying to enjoy time outside and time with my family as well.
That's awesome. My husband has a degree in communication, so he's all into that rhetoric stuff, and I like it too. So, so you guys have your joint venture, All the Household. What sparked your interest in liturgical living, and how does All the Household contribute to the goal of celebrating the liturgy in the home?
Sure, I can kind of start there. So to speak to your question about what sparked my interest, I'll provide a little bit more background. I grew up in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, but I wasn't familiar with, to be frank, the church here or the liturgy. At least not in the way that I've grown to love it and enjoy it now. And so when that change was in college, so I went to Concordia Beckwan in Wisconsin and was going for my nursing degree there, but enjoyed taking the theology classes. And I started going to this church there, and they used the divine liturgy. And to be honest, I didn't like it at first. Well, I didn't dislike it, but it was so unfamiliar.
Right.
And I think as we'll continue to talk later, there's a real aspect of beauty that draws you in. And so the first kind of time I started thinking about these things was just the beauty of the liturgy and hymnody that I hadn't been exposed to in such a way prior. Mm-hmm. And I like to tell the story, as silly as it is, we would sing and pray Compline on our campus. And I remember, so we had a New Testament class and we had to read through the Bible, and I was reading the Gospel of Luke and realized for the first time that I already had memorized the Nunc Dimittis without even knowing it. And I realized that the Divine Liturgy is scripture.
Yeah. And
that sounds so funny, but it is such a like monumental moment to realize that like what we've been singing and praying is biblical, and then has that thread that runs through our whole liturgical life of prayer. And so I got exposed to different traditions during that time in college and people who are really living out the faith in a way that was foreign to me, and just thought it was beautiful.
That's great. So much of what you said rings a bell with me, because I also grew up in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, but it was, like you said, just kind of, well, a lot of it was foreign to me. I did have grow up in a church that for probably half of my childhood used the divine service, and then, well, they used TLH, and then it switched to more blended, and then but like you said, in college, and then after I started, I didn't have that experience with a Lutheran college. However, I started realizing that this is, I noticed that I had it memorized from my childhood, and I was thinking, this is what is stuck in my head, and this is church to me, and this is not so much. And so it rings a lot.
I think it's a shocking moment when you realize that you're singing the tunes that are just like ingrained in your head from repetition, and you're like, these are just gorgeous to sing and to have like in your memory. And so,
to have that, you know, they're passed down from generation to generation. And
exactly.
And like my great grandmother, who was Lutheran, she was singing the same things. And so it's special to have that connection and to have something that's real and lasting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My kids run around all the time singing the liturgy, and we've never like sat down at home and had a lesson. Okay, today we're going to memorize, you know, the Kyrie or, you know, whatever. They've just from day one, almost, my oldest, not necessarily, but for the most part from day one, they've just heard it over and over and over and over. And it's in their hearts and in their minds, and it's such a gift to be able to see that in them already.
That's so wonderful.
What about you, Kristen? Your background? Yeah.
So I also grew up LCMS Lutheran, but it wasn't until after my undergraduate years, and I lived in Latvia in Europe for a year on a Fulbright grant. And when I was there, it was really interesting to see what a historically Lutheran country looked like in practice, and got me thinking about how these old folk traditions can be used to point people to Christ and how they're really used as an educational tool within society. And so in a country like Latvia, a lot of those traditions and holidays are really embedded within the culture and have even seen a resurgence since the Cold War, with families practicing them in the way that they're promoted within the country. And so I really don't think that they take them for granted as much as what we maybe do within the Lutheran Church in America. And so, it was really fascinating to be living over there and partaking in these traditions and going to a Lutheran church and realizing, you know, that the liturgical living that we're doing here in our households and that we learn in our own congregations is really something that's happening all over the globe. And that in many ways, people are interested in bringing these traditions and holidays back throughout the world.
Yeah, I've seen that even in Germany, which is these days highly secular, and yet so much of their holidays are church holidays.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I had a story even when I was living over there. I went to visit some friends in Germany. And when I was in their home over Holy Week, we sat down and had the Maundy Thursday dinner, which was Maultaschen. Mm-hmm. And I had never experienced this before. I didn't know what it was. And so I asked them what the story was behind it. And I learned that this dish had such a rich tradition in the fact that it's like minced meat with vegetables kind of in a pastry pocket or a sort of dumpling. And when I asked them about it, they had said, you know, the story with it went that the meat and the vegetables combined all so small, and then underneath this pastry dill made it seem like God could not see that they were eating meat and breaking the fast. And so even this, you know, silly little tradition, something that this part of Germany had been doing for a long, long time, all of a sudden became an educational tool or a way to teach your household and family. In my case, I was the American guest in their house, about how the church year really relates to even things like sharing in a family dinner or making a new recipe. And so it was interesting how the liturgical church could even come into a small thing like that around the family's table.
So the second part of that was, so how does your venture, all the household, contribute to the celebration of the liturgy in the home?
So I would say that when we started the project, we really tried to think about it in two parts, kind of, you know, what our philosophy was behind the endeavor, but then also what we were going to do practically with it for folks. And so when we looked at all these resources and books that are out there about Lutheran traditions, we realized that there wasn't really one centralized resource or way for people to access them. You know, even though these traditions have been celebrated for a long, long time in different parts of the world or different parts of America, there wasn't a good way for Lutherans nowadays to understand what those traditions were and how they could access them. And so that's kind of what we really wanted to do with this project, was have a niche in researching the historical traditions and harvesting what the church had had held on to for such a long time, but then be able to share those with people as well. And so with that, we obviously look at the historical observances of Christ's life and of the work of his saints, but then also how those fit in with the lectionary, and then what the traditions are alongside the lectionary, and how we can teach people about those saints and holidays, not only as they fall kind of according to the calendar that we find in our Lutheran service book, the hymnal, but then also what some other saints are that have been historically celebrated within the Lutheran church, but are maybe not as well known to folks.
Yeah, I'll kind of touch on the more practical side of that. So as we kind of flow from that philosophy, we have just, you'll see a post on our website on Mondays. We like to really just talk about what the holy day is. We'll talk about specific Sundays in the church year, as well as feasts of saints or commemorations. And so we'll fundamentally talk about who the person is and then how the day has been celebrated in the past, and then some ideas that people have over the years of how you might celebrate that tradition. So naturally, our objective isn't to provide anything new, but to share like what we're marveling at with these gems that we have from the fathers and mothers in our faith that they've passed down to us. And with that, we also like to include at least a few pieces of classical artwork. Yeah. We talked a little bit before about beauty and that, you know, artwork is just a great tool to foster that learning, whether you you know, enjoy artwork in that way. We have a lot of woodcuts that we like to feature, and
those
others
are my favorite. I love the woodcuts.
Yeah, and then secondly, on Wednesdays we'll post something a little bit more specific and concrete. So I love food, and that's been one of the main ways that I like to really like hit home with a certain day. And so often something sweet, but we have a few more savory ideas as well. And let's see, then a few crafts or ideas. So, you know, traditionally it might be a food that people bring into the home, or like for Pentecost, we have the dove that we, you know, featured as something that can hang over, or sorry, hang over the table. And so we just have a few different ideas that we like to bring for people to try if it fits their specific flavor that they're looking for in their home, or something that would resonate with their family in particular.
Right. I think what y'all are doing is so important, because like you said, there's just not these resources for Lutherans. You just kind of have to pick. And if you're, especially if you're a convert, or if you weren't well catechized in this stuff, or grew up with it, it's like, how do I determine what of this I can rightly use from Catholic or Orthodox sources, and then how do I determine what is not necessarily a good idea to use from this? And so it is a good idea. Go ahead.
That's exactly what we were running into as well, as, you know, there are some resources out there and some people that are doing similar projects online, but a lot of those resources are coming from other churches, you know, that maybe have some similarities with us. But at the same time, we really think that the Lutheran Church has a particular historical and theological perspective that's really important, right, and worth contributing to the conversation. And so it's nice that we're able to also appreciate the things that come from our own tradition. I know one of the little research endeavors that we've embarked on that we really thought was interesting was this book that the Reverend Dr. Daniel Harmelink of our Synod's Concordia Historical Institute gave us. And my husband works there, so, you know, we were able to have a tie that way. But this was a cookbook called The Heritage of Cooking, a Collection of Recipes from East Perry County, Missouri. Oh, wow. And so it was interesting because this cookbook came to us, you know, of our descendants of the Saxon immigrants that came to that particular area of Missouri. And, you know, they wrote down the history of their culinary traditions and when they would celebrate these and how it was useful for them. And so even a resource like that, that luckily we've been able to kind of resurrect and feature on our website and through our project, is something that can show folks that it's not just the other churches that were celebrating these things, but it was also our own synod and our own ancestors.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen things like, you know, Catholic Family Crate, and I'm like, where, until recently, it was like, where are these things for Lutherans? And you know, even just knowing what saints' days we actually celebrate in the Lutheran Church, as opposed, they have a different, you know, calendar in the Catholic Church. And so it's a very good resource. And so very important.
Well, we've talked some about you know, specific saint days and culinary traditions and those sort of things for celebrating the feasts, but seeing as you know, you both mentioned very important your role as homemaker and mother, how do you weave the idea of liturgical living into your homemaking? How is that outside of the, you know, those very specific feasts, how do you weave it throughout your day, throughout your week, throughout your year? And how is homemaking a part of liturgical living to you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess first we want to say that explicitly that liturgical living isn't only for homemakers, right?
Although
it is, as you said, such a huge part of what we do simply as being Christians by nature of our identity. And the sorts of traditions that we are talking about are, you know, just as open to single people. And that's why we've been really encouraged to see just some feedback from people who you wouldn't expect to be this kind of cookie cutter liturgical living, but that people of all different backgrounds and even traditions, you know, see the purpose and real beauty in honoring tradition. And most importantly, as we talk about how it kind of shapes our lives, that comes from the divine service first and foremost.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So yeah, to speak again, like the traditions that we offer are easily used in the home. So if you're making a Laetare cake or again, hanging the Pentecost dove, it can be something as simple as that, that doesn't have to disrupt the whole flow of your day.
Right.
But sometimes might take a little bit of forethought and that way kind of beautifully breaks up the monotony of daily life at times. Mm-hmm. And let's see. So additionally, one of the things we've grown to love through this project and something we've been encouraged to see is that a lot of non-liturgical folks have been appreciating the content. And yeah, I guess that just circles back to my point again, that we hope that in homemaking and not in homemaking, that it all centers from the divine service and the daily prayers. I really appreciated your first episode in which you and Pastor Whedon were talking about just how the daily prayers are central points for our lives as Christians. When you wake up, you pray at the bedside, or if you have a family altar, that can be a set apart location where these things take place in the home.
And we found them to be anchors in our day, really.
Yeah. Such a good word. Yeah.
It's to co-opt a phrase from the Catholic community, is like the domestic monastery is our homes. Mm-hmm. And so I think especially in these days, it's just so important to make your home a place of sanctuary and rootedness in the faith, and to have that domestic monastery.
Sure, I'll say something on that too. I mean, I think one of the things that we've been heartened to realize with this project as well is that even when, you know, the traditions may seem old or stuffy at times, you know, something that was practiced by people in the past but really isn't relevant to our lives today, that one of the fun or really enjoyable things about being a homemaker and being in the house with your family is trying to find a fun way to relate these ideas to your kids and to the circles of influence that you have. And so it's nice because even as we've embarked on the project and learned more about these days and offered ideas to our readers about how they might celebrate them in their own homes, you know, we totally encourage and love it when we see people doing their own take on the historical tradition, or, you know, not just making the recipe as we give it, but having their own contribution of what that means to them, or why a certain day might be a favorite in their house because it's their kid's name day, or because a certain saint really means something to them, or they learned about it from their congregation and their local pastor. And so they really feel enlightened within that knowledge of understanding how it relates to their day-to-day life. And so it's just enjoyable to be able to celebrate these things within the home, because we really have the freedom and opportunity to give our own twist to things and realize that at the end of the day, you know, the suggestions that we have are really just supposed to be educational moments and things where, you know, you're making waffles for the Annunciation and your kid says, "Mommy or Daddy, why are we having waffles for dinner? We usually have waffles for breakfast. You know, what is this crazy thing that we're doing?" And all of a sudden you can tell them and use it as the opportunity to explain, you know, this is how people have done it in the past and this is how we're doing it today. And it's not just a silly thing, but it really has meaning for us and meaning for others.
That's great. So outside of some of the bigger feasts, what are some of your favorite ways, I guess, to bring, just specific to your family, to bring the liturgy, to make it fun in the home for kids? I know you guys have really young kids, but or just for your family in general. To we started doing a while back, we call it coffee, cake, and catechism. So we,
with a comma.
Yeah, coffee, comma, cake, comma, and catechism. Anyway, so coffee. we coffee have cake. To have coffee, and we'll make a cake, and then we'll sit down to do Because, like you said, not well catechized. I realized shortly before this that there are 6 parts for 6 days leading up to Sunday. And I was like, wow. It shouldn't have been a like major realization at 34 years old, but it was. And so I was like, well, let's do this every day. And then on Dad's days off, we'll have coffee and cake and do catechism during that time. And so my kids look forward to it because they get to have coffee, or they get to have cake, and we don't always give them coffee, but you know, they have something special to look forward to while we're doing it, and it's not just a chore. So is there anything like that that you guys do? April, you too?
Oh, I was just gonna say, you know, you and I were talking last night about how do you make it happen when just your heart's not in it, you're overwhelmed, you're weary, such and such. And I don't know why it didn't hit me until now, but when you were saying it, I realized, oh, you do it once and then your kids will always make sure that it happens henceforth and forevermore.
Yeah. Like, especially with that. Yeah.
Yeah, it really is, because now, you know, I started to joke that, oh, you've painted yourself into a corner, Laura, now you have to do it. And then it just light bulb. Well, yeah, that's what you do. This is what we do. And the kids know it and they make sure it happens. And
just like they make sure you put up the Christmas tree, even if you're like tired and don't want to put up the Christmas tree.
Yeah. So I really want to applaud you, Kristen and Tessa, for starting these traditions, starting this way of living when your children are very young, because it is a lot harder when you're older and you're in the thick of, you know, homeschooling and attitudes that, you know, including my own, and all of those things. But yeah, starting from the beginning, your kids aren't going to know any different. This is what we do. So I think that's wonderful. And if I could go back, and do that myself, I would.
Well, that's wonderful. I really appreciate those ideas as we start to have that level of accountability from our little ones.
And yeah.
I was going to say the thing that my little one gets most excited about is extinguishing candles. I don't know if
yours
have that same
my
passion.
My 10-year-old still gets.
It's like the worst punishment we could give him is to not let him extinguish the candles after prayers. But just that, I guess to give an example of a way that we go about this in the home is one of our favorite things is a house blessing on Saturday evenings, where this used to be a more common thing for families to do. So we incorporated it into our own practice. And so we'll start at the altar, and instead of just a regular Vespers, it'll be, you know, a reading for the gospel for the next day. So you kind of get that ringing in your head already. And then we'll go around the house with incense and candles. And when he's older, he'll get to carry his own candle, Ambrose, that is. And that's just a great way to get to, you know, use these fun tools that we have, like incense and candles and icons that, again, are used as teaching tools to point us to Christ, and hopefully one day explain that to him, why we go around the house and bless our beds and acknowledge that everything we do in this household is for Christ's glory, we pray ultimately. And so that's just one fun thing we enjoy. And so already at 18 months, he's going to the altar after dinner and folding his hands and looking up to the icons, that's or he'll great. Carry one around the house and sing out as best he can.
See, and this is one of the things that I think is so valuable, is because I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, I'm sitting here like, tell me more about this.
Right? I mean, I've only ever heard of house blessing in terms of when you move into a house and have, you know, your pastor or whatever. So I'm like, I want to know more.
So that'll be up on your blog soon, right?
Sure. Yeah, we'd love to talk about that. It's a good idea.
No pressure.
I know that one of the things our family really enjoys doing, you know, even with our baby that's just 3.5 months old, you know, as he sits and listens to what we say and tries to partake in things as best as he can, is reading the stories of the saints that we're talking about, or the story of the day that's coming up, and just kind of ruminating and really thinking about how These people lived out their faith in, you know, oftentimes a hostile world that they were living in. And we connect with that in the increasingly hostile world that we feel that we also live in. Another thing that our family enjoys is listening to music. That's how my husband and I met, as we both were playing stringed instruments in the orchestra, and we're music majors at the college we attended. And so we love the fact that a lot of the beautiful music that the church has to cherish is something that can connect to the liturgical life. I know you guys talked about this in your last episode in terms of hymnody and how you share music with the people around you. I know that one of the things Tessa and I talk about often and share with each other and encourage other people to do is to listen to the Bach cantatas that were written for the liturgical year, and knowing that it kind of goes along with the historic lectionary and the things that we're writing about and trying to recover historically. And so we always suggest that people can go about that in their own way, and that that might be a wonderful way for them to look at these dates within their own homes. That's one of the reasons that we have our Spotify playlists as well, that we've been curating to go with the church seasons, is there's just so many wonderful pieces of music and composers that we're thinking about these things in the same way that we are. And I think it really complements living liturgically in the household.
Talking about, sorry, I lost my train of thought there. Good podcast host. Talking about the different feasts, would each of you share, like, what is your favorite liturgical feast of the year, and what does your family do to celebrate it?
Sure, I can start with this one. One of our favorite days is Lutare, and we love having Lutare cake, which is one of the recipes that we've shared. And so that's just really special because it's this holiday that focuses on joy and happiness and what is to come in the midst of this season of, the somber Lent season, when we are thinking about our sins and we're really embedded within that period as we walk with Christ. And so we love that the cake is an example of that. You know, it's a little break from the fast, but it's also a way that you're able to understand your place within the Lenten season as well. I know that another one of our family's favorite days is, and things that we do for the day, is making the Annunciation waffles, one of the things I've already mentioned. And our household, our last name is Einertsen, very Scandinavian, and so we see a connection there just because the waffles are a Scandinavian tradition. And so I know that my husband and I really felt connected to that particular holiday and thought that it, you know, tied back to our heritage and culture and something that we're able to teach our kids too.
What about you, Tessa?
Yes. Well, I'm absolutely taking the low-hanging fruit here and saying Easter and Holy Week, but I have an excuse. And that is because I felt like it was the first holiday that I really, that really opened my eyes to just everything we're talking about, that everything we do in regards to our flesh can be attuned to the Spirit. And so just my favorite story is during college, there was a very kind family that would have a lot of students over, and what the tradition was in their family that they've been they've received and will continue to pass down to their kids is that from Good Friday through Holy Saturday, you fast. And I think this is a good point too, because a lot that we do is to do with feasting and the joyous parts, but as Kristen was alluding to, a lot of it does have to do with preparation and bodily preparation. That ultimately our eyes are set on eternity, and there are things that we can do here in time to just point our body and soul to those things. And so it starts with a fast, but on Saturday at midnight or Sunday at midnight, we would all gather in this professor's house with his family, and you'd enter in this dark back door, and all the families and their children be kind of whispering with anticipation. And right at midnight, he'd scream out, "Christ is risen," and the music would start blaring, and just this beautiful feast was prepared for us. And I think just what a beautiful image it is to be able to enjoy that kind of celebration here, even. And so it just,
It's okay. It's great, okay to
such a great
like Holy Week and
Yeah, I thought you were gonna say Advent. That's mine. So
it is. Yeah.
So go ahead, April. Advent.
Oh, I still have not been able to be an Advent purist. Maybe this year I'll do it. Like I put the tree up and I just, I'm a convert. I didn't grow up Lutheran. I'm still learning as I go. So much of this is so new to me. So it's a big adjustment to wait on the tree and the carols and all that. But we did the wreath and I don't know, just O Come, O Come Emmanuel just hits different the last couple of years and just really feeling that longing of the Israelites and, you know, when, oh Lord, it's just really had a deeper meaning for me the last couple of years. And, that anticipation and waiting, you know, just really awakened something in my kids. You know, I don't even know how to describe it, but just a joyous longing, to really experience that instead of jumping right into all of the hustle and the bustle and the consumerism of Christmas, to even have a piece of that, even if we don't do it perfectly, was just really meaningful for my family. Once we started doing that. So
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say that I love that story. And I love the fact that when you really embed yourself within these seasons and traditions, they take a different feeling or familiarity for mm-hmm. you and your family. You know, it's so nice to feel like you can anchor yourself within different days that come around and that they have a distinction from each other. You know, it's all not somber and it's all not joyous, but there's a combination of both. And luckily, I think Lutherans understand kind of that distinction and parallel pretty well. And so it's just enjoyable to be able to find kind of meaning in that within your day to day as well.
Right. And I was just going to say, it doesn't have to be all or nothing either. Like
right.
last year, I put the tree up at the beginning of December with just the lights, but I didn't put any of the ornaments on until like the week of Christmas. So it was like partially.
Yeah.
But
and it's good to remember that these things aren't, they're not law. They're not,
not at all.
It's not a sin to put the Christmas tree up and buy presents and all that. And it's just, you know, a blessing to wait, but it's not a law.
Right. It's something we get to do.
Right.
So, mine, I guess, because this was kind of my entrance into liturgical feasts outside of Christmas and Easter and Advent and Lent. Mine is Michaelmas, but I also have three boys. My oldest three are boys. So they're 9 and 7 and almost 5. And you know, what boy just doesn't love a story about defeating a dragon? And so my kids love Michaelmas. Last year we did angel food cake with the blackberries. And
that was such a good idea.
I didn't have a whole lot of energy last year to do much more than that because I had just had a baby the month before. But they enjoyed it and it was fun. And we read St. George and the Dragon. And I think, like you said, April, with Advent, with everything just feeling like, come Lord, I was looking at Virginia's seal and it reminded me, it just says, seek semper tyrannis. And it's like person holding a spear into another, but it just reminded me of St. Michael, of images of St. Michael and Satan. And I think it's good to remind ourselves, especially in these times when we feel frightened or afraid of the future. Yeah. And it just looks grim that the devil has been defeated and that we don't have to be afraid. And so that the tyrant Satan has been thrown out of heaven and defeated, and yay, St. Michael.
You know, as growing up evangelical and not knowing a single Lutheran until I met my husband, only knowing a couple of Catholics. So from the outside looking in, all of these things just looked to me like just physical trappings of you know, idolatry or things that distracted from Christ. And I think it's really important, especially because I know not all of our listeners are Lutheran, but I think it's important to, Kristen, you've used the word tools several times, that these are tools. There's nothing special or holy about any of these physical items. The incense doesn't save us. The cakes certainly don't save us. but that these all point to Christ. These are tools not to just enrich our lives, but always, always pointing to Christ. And I, you know, my husband and I were lamenting this week that with COVID and just bad news every day, and he's been working from home, and even just before that, as mothers and homemakers, things can feel monotonous. And he said the other day, it feels like Groundhog Day. You know, just over and over the same. There's nothing to look forward to. Something you said a few minutes ago, Kristen, just really hit me about how the liturgical year, it breaks up the sameness of the days, and it gives us, some days are joyful and some days are anticipatory and some days are for lament, and there's a time for everything. And so I think, you know, again, it's always to point us to Christ, but it's just, it's a blessing in that way.
Absolutely. So since Michaelmas is coming up this month, can you talk to us a little bit about the history of Michaelmas, or St. Michael and All Angels, I think is what the Lutheran Church calls it. And
I want to hear about the blackberries.
I know.
I don't know what the blackberries are about. Like, I'm excited.
Yeah, absolutely. So this was a fun one because it's just such a rich holiday and a good one to kind of bring us to the end of this season of ordinary time that we've been in, where you know, the Sundays look similar and they follow a pattern they've been leading up to this kind of end of the year. And St. Michael is such a great day to have at this time of year as we're approaching the, you know, the end time themes and this narrative of victory. And so we give, you know, thanks on Michaelmas for Michael and the way that God uses his, all of his angels. And the way that specifically this day came to be on our liturgical calendar is that, like many other days, it was because of the dedication of a basilica. And so once this specific church is dedicated in the honor of St. Michael, that became an important day for that parish and then for the church in general too. And it's thought that September 30th was the day that it was actually dedicated. But, you know, people who like to party will start the night before. And there's also this precedent in the liturgy that the eve before is really the beginning of the new day. And so September 29th stuck as the day. And some of this, you know, we're not entirely sure on, but nonetheless, we get this great feast that is one of the more popular Lutheran feasts, I believe. And so we get the blackberries, as you mentioned. And the legend goes that once Saint Michael defeated the dragon, of course, he couldn't stay in heaven any longer, so he was cast to earth and fell into a blackberry bush. And falling into the bush, he cursed it, and from there on out, the blackberries were spoiled naturally. So many will say that you can go ahead and pick your blackberries, but September 29th is the last day. And so we'll enjoy a nice feast of blackberries. As we suggest, you can make a jam or on angel food cake. Just sounds absolutely delicious too. Had you heard a similar legend?
I know. Yeah, I think I read something about it. There's a Catholic blog, I think, called Carrots for Michaelmas that I originally found, which started me down this rabbit hole. And so I think that's originally where I found it.
Great. Yeah. So a few other just traditions that we stumbled across are that a goose is a common main course to have. And we talked already a little bit about the Bach cantatas. And so, of course, there's music especially dedicated to this day as well.
We started we started learning this week, 521 in the LSB, Christ the Lord of Hosts Unshaken. And it's just so great, especially, you know, like I said, right now, it's just like, I feel energized to keep going because Michael has, and Christ have defeated the dragon, and, you know, I can keep going.
Kristen, yeah, did you have anything to? Oh, what?
Go ahead. I was going to say.
I was going to ask if Kristen had anything to add about Michaelmas.
No, I mean, it's just a really fun day, and I love that story that Tessa told about the blackberries. Just because when we're doing our research, oftentimes we find a lot of these things are kind of quirky or weird.
Yeah.
Hearing them for the first time, you're like, "What? How does that make sense?" Or I don't really understand how that connects to the day. And I think that's part of the fun that we've had with it is not only understanding the traditions better and being able to share them with people, but realizing that even when they seem a little quirky or odd, that there's still a reason behind it.
Right.
And something that is worth reading and worth remembering. And who knows, maybe the quirkier or odder that it is, the easier that we remember it or that our kids remember it and that we're able to continue it in the future. And so I think that's why something like the blackberries is especially popular or fun for folks to think about, just because it helps us connect the day to something tangible.
Right. Yeah, my kids will love that, definitely. Well, obviously you guys have done a lot of research. You've spent a lot of time, you know, looking into these traditions and what do we do and why do we do it? And so you're pretty far down the line here. If you were telling someone just getting started with all this, if you were giving them advice, where would you advise that they start, especially someone who, you know, maybe has three kids and is homeschooling and is very busy, you know?
Sure.
You're not talking about anybody specifically.
No, nobody. Yeah.
A theoretical listener.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, perhaps we can assume that people have their kind of devotional routine that they enjoy. Certainly most people I find know about the Treasury of Daily Prayer, and that is just a great resource because you open it and the day is there, the date, the readings, the psalm, even a reading from a church father or other theologian is already there. And so that one is very just user-friendly, easy to understand.
Tessa, would you tell that theoretical person that is the place to start before you start adding in feast days and celebrations and creative cakes and whatnot, but to start with prayer and devotion in the home?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And we mentioned before about just the divine service is that, I guess you could say like the light that illumines the rest of your week and what you're doing and studying and, you know, even to not be so tied down to one particular book or another. Course, your own pastor is such a great resource. Churches will often have their, our church is called the Church at Prayer, where there's a scripture you could, you know, perhaps ponder on for that week, you know, part of the catechism. And so, you know, I think naturally that's where we would start, is just going to the divine service and making that a priority for the family. And then we found that at least having one time of either matins or vespers, of course, ideally both, but that doesn't always happen, to be honest. But it's a good thing to shoot for. And then in that circumstance, you could use the Treasury of Daily Prayer. Another one we really enjoy is Oremus by Pastor Kind. And that one, to be honest, as a not as musically inclined person, is a little bit harder to use. My husband is great at sight reading and I'm not as great at that part, which isn't necessary, but he does have the Psalms beautifully with beautiful tones and again, more readings. And that one does follow the liturgical calendar in such a way that each Sunday you have the new week and you're reading the same reading from the gospel, I believe for the first half of the week. And so you're hearing those same themes over and over again. So we really enjoyed that one for that reason. I'm curious what Kristen will say for their devotions, or if you have a favorite book in that vein that you enjoy in your family.
Yeah, I mean, we love those resources as well. I know that one of the things that we've enjoyed reading more recently is Celebrating the Saints by Pastor Whedon. Yeah, of course, so we had him, you know, for the first episode and are familiar with that resource, but it's just nice to have a succinct description and prayer to go with each of these people and days. And, you know, that's one of the resources that we look to when we write up our posts. But it's nice to be able just to have a book in the home written by him that, you know, really is guided with that in mind as well.
So would you say then to somebody who then after they have the devotions down, just start small, like choose one or two, or maybe one per season, feast or celebration to focus on? Because sometimes it feels like, oh, I have to do all of them, you know, and we know we don't have to, but it's like, I want to do all of them because I have limited time.
Yeah, I would say that would definitely be the recommendation. I mean, I know that that is one of the things that Tessa and I discuss quite frequently with our project is we have a lot of content that we've put out there. And that's kind of our goal, is to cover each day and each person, no matter how major or minor they might be. But by no means does that mean that we celebrate all of the days or that we think other households should or can even. I mean, it's just not feasible, really. And so one of the next things you could do, you know, once you have your resources down in terms of devotionals and daily prayer life, is a couple of the cookbooks that we reference quite often. One is A Continual Feast by Evelyn Bergvitz. Also Cooking with the Saints. Both of those, though, are not Lutheran sources. And so once again, that was kind of our interest in a project like this, is taking ideas from books like that, but then realizing that they're not going to be a perfect fit for your own celebration of these days at home. But those are fantastic resources. I know that Tessa is really familiar with the Around the Year with the Von Trapp family book.
Yeah, I have that one.
You could speak to that a little bit, Tessa, just because I know that's been really helpful for your family.
Yeah, sure. Oh, it's just, I mean, it's a beautiful book to look at, but then Maria von Trapp, of course, many are familiar with on some level, wrote this book just sharing how her family inherited these traditions, and then gives a little brief description of the day, perhaps an activity, and then in each section there are, of course, a few recipes and carols that they might sing. And so that just serves as another great inspiration, whether or not you know, we agree with all the execution of the practices, or even some of the feasts and festival days that are different. You know, another thing we talk about is just, it's so encouraging to see people living this way of Christian life, just to have encouragement from it. And so that's why we enjoy some of these sources. And of course, our brothers and sisters who have been great encouragements to us. So yeah, those are a few cookbooks, a few online resources that we like to regularly stay up to date with, of course, Issues, etc.
Yeah.
Goddestines, their blog and podcast are both just great resources.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys too.
Oh yeah. They're great.
And one that I recently really started using was a book called The Christian Calendar. I believe it's an Anglican resource. Is that correct, Kristen? I know you have it.
Yeah, I think well. So, yeah.
And just the reason I love this book is that, as we're talking about teaching our children, it has beautiful pieces of art for almost every Sunday of the liturgical calendar. So, for example, I'll do a bit of a morning basket with my son, and we'll just read the gospel reading, and I can hold that picture out in front of him. And so he can at least point to Jesus and a few of the other, you know, people in that narrative or pericope that's coming up. And then it also gives kind of a meditation reflection for that day. So that's been another great resource as well.
Well,
I was just going to mention, she just mentioned an Anglican book, and I wondered at first if you were talking about the one I have, the My Book of the Church's Year, which is also an Anglican resource. And every single time I post a picture of it on Instagram, somebody asks me, what is this book? I think I originally learned about it on a Catholic blog, but it's an Anglican, I can't remember the author. I don't have it in front of me. But My Book of the Church's Year is another great one. It's just a visual of the different feasts. There's no writing in it. But that's great for younger kids. They can see these different symbols of the church and pictures of them. So
yeah, I remember you posting that one.
Yeah.
And I think I've seen it from several other people too, I think.
Yeah, highly recommend.
Well, thank you guys for joining us. Thank you, ladies. I know we had to push this off a little bit, but now that we've had baby here and life a little bit more normal, then I'm glad we got to do this. Can you tell everybody where they can find you guys, all the household?
Sure. We would love if people could follow along with our project. And as we learn more about the year, you know, along with the readers that we have, our website is allthehousehold.com. So that's pretty easy to find. But then on the website, we also have an email sign up that we encourage anyone to put their email in, and then you'll be able to get a Friday favorite email from us that lists the readings for the Sunday that's coming up, and then a few things that Tess and I have enjoyed from the week, or a recommendation that we have for how you might incorporate more of these liturgical living ideals into your home. We're also on Instagram, which is all.the.household. That's our username there. And I know that we have a couple of like fun projects that we're looking forward to. Tessa, you could speak to a couple of those since you've been working hard on them.
Well, sure. Well, this is more coming out of a personal problem of giving gifts, which I always have to put more forethought into than I give myself time for. And so just a fun idea would be to collect some of these great resources that we love, and, you know, some of our shops within the LCMS and from our Christian brothers and sisters, and feature some gift guides. And so that should be up on the website now for anyone to check that out. And if you find just some of the stuff that we're doing helpful and you end up making a recipe or just being inspired by it, if you share that with us, we'd love to share that with other people too. And so we're looking how to create kind of like a way for us to be mutually encouraged by one another as we are.
Because that's so important going forward, that we have this community and build up this community and support each other and encourage each other. Right. And, you know, I know that's your goal and that's our goal here too. So
wonderful. Well, thank you so much for having us. Thanks again for coming and talking with us.
And it was a good conversation. We really enjoyed it. Thanks, ladies.
Yeah. Thank you.
Bye.
That's all for today. If you want to learn more from Kristen and Tessa, you can find them at their website, allthehousehold.com, and on Instagram at all.the.household. And remember, the dragon may spit and curse, but he has already been defeated. Until next time, we have the one thing needful, Soli Deo Gloria.